Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Women to Watch is an intimate look into the lives of prominent and influential women leaders from around the world and the challenges they faced on their journey. It's the real story behind her title. Join us every week to hear more stories about women from around the world and in your own communities at womentowatch.net. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another week of Women to Watch. I'm Sue Rocco. Thanks so much for being with me. Joining me this week will be Maya Weiss, and Maya is the Director of Brand Strategy for BRC Imagination Arts based in California. Maya started out as a dancer and then shares with us how she went through somewhat of a midlife crisis and came out on the other side working behind the scenes in the arts world. So it's a really great conversation. Don't forget to stay with us during the breaks to hear from our watch team of corporate partners. And we'd love to invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel at W2W Media. That's W2W Media. So now I'm thrilled and honored to welcome to the show, Maya Weiss. Maya, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. Tell me, how are things there in California this morning?
Well, it's getting hot, which is good, which means it's cool and beach appropriate. Before, it's been a little too cold to want to jump into a body of water, but now at least it's feeling like summer, so we can't complain.
Oh, good.
Although we will complain, because that's what we do.
Of course, we're too cold, we're too hot, whatever it is, we want the opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to share with our viewers and our listeners, as we always do, a little bit about your background and where you came from. And you actually were born and raised in LA. And I wonder if you could just describe the community for us a little bit. What was the neighborhood like? What were the people around you like?
Oh, that's a great question, because LA, depending on where you are, right, every neighborhood is very different. I grew up predominantly on the east side of Los Angeles. So I spent most of my time in like Pasadena, Altadena area, for those that are familiar. It's kind of northeast in Los Angeles. But I also spent a few years with my family in Palos Verdes, which is the Palos Verdes Peninsula south. It's closer to the beach. So that was a completely different atmosphere and culture and environment. I grew up dancing. And so my mom took me all around the city to take dance classes and for performances. And so now as an adult, living in Los Angeles, you know, and the city's changed a lot. And I was just telling someone, as an adult, you sort of, as a kid, you really take for granted the evolution of things. You sort of believe that, oh, LA is the best, and it's like done. Right? LA is baked, it's completed, but yet all the development that continues to happen, all the changes, the people, even the climate is changing. It's getting a little bit more wet. But I think LA, the thing I love the most about it is how diverse it is. Not only in people, types of people, you know, as a someone that's from here, I've heard I'm one in a million, right? Because there are so many people who come here. And you can really do anything you want in Los Angeles. You know, every big sports team is here. All the entertainment is here. Every major corporation has some kind of an outfit here or close by. And so I really love being in LA because I feel like for all intents and purposes, I'm at the center of it all.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting as you were describing that, I'm thinking people say the very same thing about New York and they couldn't be more different, right? I mean, completely different coast, right? And, but that sense of there's a lot going on here. There's a lot happening here.
Well, I would argue that in New York, you can't go to the snow and the beach in the same day.
That is correct. That is correct. So I know that your mom encouraged the arts when you were growing up. And first, I just was curious, what led her to do that? What was her own background and why did she think that was so important?
You know, my mom is a very curious woman. And I think it was her own just affinity for the arts. She grew up taking dance classes. And I think it was something that she'd always been exposed to and had an appreciation and a deep respect for. And so, you know, as soon as she could, she made sure that, you know, my mom was always the kind of woman too, where like anything that we showed interest in, she would just like overwhelm us with it. Oh, you talk about sewing? Well, great. Here's a bunch of sewing classes. Here's the sewing machine. Here's the machine, you know, all the stuff, you know. So dance was something, even as I get older as an adult, I always have to qualify. I'm interested, but not that interested, you know. So, no, but I think it's been amazing because her curiosity is what led to me experiencing all the different kinds of dance. I had so many incredible teachers. So I think it was just her early exposure.
Yeah. You know, I often think, when we have the benefit of having somebody in our life when we're growing up, who I describe as really seeing us, who we are, it always has a huge impact. It's very difficult in life in general to meet people that fully see you and understand, you. And I wonder if there was somebody like that in your life, because often people who are in the arts have teachers or mentors that they have that experience with.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to have a few really incredible teachers and mentors throughout my life. It was even just leaving dance, which, you know, that was an identity crisis. And so being met on the other side by someone who saw me and appreciated me, that was huge. But yeah, I think with dance and with me specifically, I think I was always a really, you know, not to sound like, you know, self-absorbed, but I was always a very smart kid. And so I always had teachers, I think they would either feel threatened by me or would feel excited by me. And so I could always feel that as a kid. And it totally shaped not only my relationship to them, but my relationship to whatever they were teaching me, whatever was happening in that classroom. And so even like I went to an arts high school, and so you're spending a lot of time with specific teachers and other students. But, you know, I had teachers in high school that just really did not understand me. And, you know, it just leaves you, especially as a child, feeling wrong, as opposed to feeling like here's a teacher who sees me and they know I can do better and they're going to help me and coach me. And so I would instinctively lean into that energy of someone who saw me enough and cared enough to push me harder.
Yeah. Can you tell me what, when you think about those early years, what was the most challenging for you?
Dance? No, just kidding. No, I remember I had an experience where, like, you know, with dance, you watch dancers and it's just so incredibly graceful. It looks so effortless. And I really had a moment, I think it was my junior year of high school, when I had to tell myself, look, Maya, like, this will never feel good. This will never be comfortable. And as soon as I accepted that, I grew exponentially, because instead of waiting for things to get easier, instead of waiting for everything to feel as good as it looked, like, as just accepting that this, it sucked, you know?
When you say it didn't feel good, in what way? Describe for me.
I mean, dance is really hard when you watch, especially like professional ballet dancers. It is really hard. And I think that people just totally take for granted how much it hurts, because the pain cannot show up in the end result. When you're watching football, you can watch everyone slam into each other and it hurts and no one's hiding the discomfort. But I think a lot of times we take for granted just watching dancers, the sheer effort involved in doing what they're doing physically. But I just think that for me, that was maybe just a sort of challenge. That was a bit of a breakthrough that I have. Just like accepting, like, this will never feel good.
And how about the performance aspect of it? Were you confident in your performing? Because again, it's an area where it's just can be full of critique.
I was going to say, no, I still have nightmares about being on stage and not knowing the dance, you know, and you're looking around like you're trying to remember the routine. But no, I really enjoyed performing. Like, I love performing to this day. It's still something I still love, getting up and like talking to a group of people. There's so much I learned through that experience. Like, what an incredible education just performing as a kid, not only in dance, but also theater, musical theater. It was a moment for me. I remember I would always watch myself dance. Like, you're up on stage and you're like, oh, I'm doing it. And then you watch a video of yourself and you're like, wow, I did not, that was not the routine. And I remember the experience being in high school again, the first time I watched myself perform, and it looked the way it felt. And that was like crazy for me, that experience of like, wow, I'm actually doing it now. But then also I would say that the thing that, again, I think a lot of people, even myself as a dancer, the thing that you take for granted is the amount of confidence you have to persevere as a performing artist. It's a confidence game. And, when I got to college, I sort of hit the fork in the road. Do I go to a 4-year conservatory or do I go to a traditional university? And I decided to go the university route. And part of that was because I was no longer finding joy in the performance, because my confidence wasn't there. I wasn't spending as much time in dance. And granted, I was probably, in retrospect, as good as I ever was, you know, but again, because I didn't think that I had it, you know, I'm thinking all my peers, all my competitions out there dancing every day, performing all the time. And I've just completely fallen off the train now. If I could go back in time, I would just shake myself and be like, that's not true. Keep going.
Is that right? Yeah.
But it is a confidence game, you know, and there are people who just don't have the technique or the skill, but they've got the confidence, and those will be the ones who make it in the end.
Yeah. So when you made that decision, you eventually made a decision that you were going to leave dance as a profession and, you know, stay within the arts. That's always been your interest, but be more on the creative behind the scenes side of it. Did something happen, or was it over time that you came to that decision?
I think that leaving college, I had sort of dabbled perhaps that first summer, maybe the first year. I was still auditioning a little bit. I was still taking classes pretty regularly, but then I started to realize I was living at home and I just really wanted to make some money. I really wanted to move out of my parents' house. And so that was a bit of the perhaps refocusing of, I had to sort of started to shift my own personal focus while, you know, in terms of making money. Also, I'll tell you, taking dance classes is not cheap. It can be expensive. I talk to my friends who are still dancing professionally. It is expensive to take classes in LA at a level where you feel like you're in shape. It didn't happen. I wouldn't say it happened overnight. I think that I sort of figured out, I sort of knew that I wouldn't dance wouldn't be the sort of, wouldn't be everything to me, but I was also pretty keen on building opportunities for artists. I'd met so many incredible artists, not only dancers, but visual artists and musicians and vocalists in high school. And so I thought, so many people want to be the star, but there aren't enough people building platforms, sustainable platforms for these artists. Another story I'll tell you is, I grew up, you know, one of the things I did was tap dance. And my mom would always take me to these jam sessions that would happen on a Thursday or a Tuesday night at some random bar in Little Tokyo or downtown in LA. And she would take me in there when I was 13 and, you know, would be in there all night jamming with the jazz band. And this would be the hang for a while. And I just loved that community piece of it, that, you know, you see the same people every week, sometimes there's something new, like you never know when that person's going to show up and it becomes this crazy moment. And so, but inevitably these clubs would close, you know, the owner's an alcoholic or it was mismanaged, they couldn't turn the tables fast enough. And so then the community would have to find a new home. So that was always something for me too, which was like, I really want to build a home for my friends and for these artists so that they can together. And like, you know, that process of sharing that doesn't happen. Sometimes it's public, there's an audience, but oftentimes it happens in private among artists. And that that experience is so important. And that was something that I wanted to help cultivate and maintain.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm still thinking about your mom taking you into bars at 13 to perform, you know, for the people that are in there. That's so cool. That's not something every mom would do.
No, but she was in there. I remember once I went to a bar and I was asking for a screwdriver for my tap shoe. And this woman started making me a drink. And then someone else had to be like, no, she needs an actual screwdriver. And that's what I learned. That's when I learned what a screwdriver was.
She's 13. Come on. Oh, my gosh. So eventually you went and got your MBA at the Drucker School of Management in California. And I just was wondering, what was your vision for yourself at that point, attaining that MBA?
It was to get out of my parents' home.
To get out, still get out.
Well, I'll tell you too, you know, it's one of these things where I was like, I had spent about 2 years post graduating with my bachelor's. I'm just trying to figure my life out. You know, I'm going through this identity crisis. I'm not a dancer. Who am I? What do I do? And I fell into this niche producing like music events around LA. And I really enjoyed putting on events. That was sort of like the next thing, which was like, oh, I love putting on events and shows. And so I thought, well, I'm going to, you know, continue to work in this and I'm going to go back to school. Which, you know, school, you don't get to just wake up one day and say, I'm going to go to school tomorrow. You have to apply 6 to 8 months in advance. And so I thought, well, I'll just apply and see what happens. If I can, you know, continue, you know, if I can push more in the marketing realm, because events tend to be a facet of marketing. So I was like, let me just go learn everything I can about marketing. And that was sort of the decision for me going back to the Drucker School. And I'd gone to Scripps College also in Claremont, one of the 5 C's in Claremont. And so I just loved that learning environment. And I felt like it would be, you know, now's a good time to take this sort of reset. I describe going to grad school as like when you're on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and you get 3 lifelines. And so as an adult in the real world, and then going back to school is like 1 lifeline.
Oh,
get to figure yourself out.
Listen, we're going to go into our first break. And when we come back, I want to kind of dive right into your career and talk about what was your very first job out of school. Stay with us as we go into the break. You'll hear from our watch team and we'll be back with my advice.
Hi, I'm Christy McCaffrey, founder and owner of Be The Good Media, and I'm here to share with you some good news. I wanted to share with you today a story about a woman named Tiffany Jobe. At just 37 years old, as a wife, mom, and nurse, Tiffany was blindsided with a diagnosis of advanced non-small cell lung cancer. Statistically, the prognosis is grim, but thankfully, Tiffany has responded rather well to the molecular targeted therapy she's been receiving. Not long after her diagnosis, Tiffany said that she told her husband, Nick, that she refused to leave this earth without making a positive impact. So her and her husband then set out to create a nonprofit called 10 for 10 Million. And their goal is really to encourage reoccurring donations of $10 per month in honor of the 10 million people who die annually from cancer. All of the funds collected go directly towards research. I have just found that Tiffany's attitude towards her own situation, but also towards life in general, is just so positive. I had her on the podcast, on Be The Good podcast, and I had this conversation with her, and I just left the conversation buzzing. I couldn't believe how this woman has overcome so much and yet still has the energy and the passion to do more for others. You can hear more of our conversation at BeTheGoodMedia.com. And there you'll also learn how Be The Good Media helps to amplify impact-driven missions and causes. Again, I'm Christy McCaffrey. Listen here for more good news on Women to Watch.
Hi, I'm Dawn Zier, and I'm thrilled to be back as a Watch Team contributor to share leadership advice for aspiring women to help them advance in their careers. It's hard to believe that it's been 5 years since I was last on the show as the CEO of Nutrisystem with my weekly segment on career advice. So what have I been up to? I've been watching and learning. Since we sold Nutrisystem, I've been sitting on several public and private company boards, doing speaking engagements, and have become a trusted advisor to Fortune 500 senior executives through my work with the Exco Group, a firm of experienced CEOs, board directors, and global business leaders who offer real-world experience to help organizations and senior executives unlock their full leadership potential. As someone who likes to connect the dots across industries, I found that powerful leadership does not live in silos. There are learnings everywhere. Some of the topics we'll explore in future episodes are leading with intention, being in the driver's seat of your own career, building your personal brand, dealing with workplace aggression, how to have those tough conversations, and my personal fave, lead, follow, or pass. I have two quick tips for female leaders before I close. Be a hand raiser and don't overthink things. Do not spend a lot of time contemplating whether you're qualified or good enough when an opportunity arises. Push that door open and walk right through. If you hesitate for too long, somebody else will take your seat. I've found in general that guys are much less likely to overthink and be self-critical. Please follow me on LinkedIn at Dawn Zier. And if you're a senior executive looking to grow in your career, visit ExcoLeadership.com to learn more.
Welcome back to the show. I'm speaking this week with Maya Geis, and Maya is the Director of Brand Strategy for BRC, Imagination Arts, in California. And just before the break, you know, we were talking about your reset, getting your MBA at the Drucker School, and I wondered, what was your very first job coming out of there?
My very first job after grad school was at the Eisenberg Group. It's perhaps one of the largest independent agencies in California. It's a 360 advertising agency. I was doing account work. I was doing account work on their influencer marketing team. So essentially working with brands to help them find the perfect influencers to sell either their product or, you know, to cultivate, to be a part of some larger brand campaign. So really, you know, I learned a lot about influencers during that. I was there for 1 year.
Tell me, you know what? Talk to me about influencers for a second. I think for someone of your generation, you grew up with it and you've seen, you know, what it can do for people and how it's evolved. And, you know, we did not grow up with that as being an option for making money. And I'd love to hear your take on the positives of that and whether that's something you think is going to carry into future generations as an option for a career.
I think, you know, I heard someone say once that you can either have a rich outer world or you can have a rich inner world. And I think that the influencers, you know, influencers really embody this. And it's just, you know, I have a specific relationship to the way I engage in social media. Everyone is very different, but I think some of, this can sound crazy and you asked me this without really thinking about it, but I can't think of too many pros. And I say that because I'm someone, I really believe in the power of feeling normal and the importance of feeling normal, especially as a child growing up. And like, even as an adult, we're all searching for that sense of feeling okay and right. And I'm not sure influencer marketing does that, because there is almost nothing authentic or organic about influencer marketing, especially with the intention to sell. And again, that's an opinion I don't think a lot of people will agree with. And I'm sure we can go like real deep in that subject, but that's just like my sort of thing, because I don't know what the pros are. But the cons, I think, are that we begin to think that successful people who we associate with, however we define success, are living some life that we cannot somehow also replicate or achieve. You know, it's like we see these perfect couples raising their perfect families. And even though, yeah, they tell us the bumps in the road, it's always dealt with this level, this like layer of this like gloss that just doesn't exist yes. in the real world. And so I think that that gloss, like a layer mm-hmm. of sugar on top of anything, I don't know what that does for us in the end.
And that's not a question I had planned. You, when you used the word, it just prompted me to ask you about it. And I appreciate your, you know, your candor around it, because I have similar thoughts. And you know, there's just nothing. It's very hard to find things that are real today online, right? It's very hard. Although that's where we need to be. We all need to be online to get our message out and share it with the world. So.
Something else I'll say about this that I think really absolutely ties into everything I'm doing now even is that like I believe that we're entering a world in which celebrity is overtaking craft. And now it's no longer enough to be excellent at something, to be a master at your craft. You now have to be famous for it. And that exercise is completely different. And there are people...
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The people who are famous for their pottery, who are really great at making videos and they're doing it every day and they're doing all the right things, and then they get the sponsorships and the partnerships and the opportunities like that. That person, and even though they might be an incredible potter, like they're going to get so much opportunity, while these other artists who are equally, if not more incredible, simply because they're not so visible, they will not get those opportunities, right? Because for the brands, for the people who are investing in these artists, talking about art specifically, they're looking at the numbers, they're looking at the reach. You know, they see this influencer, it's not so much their pottery, it's that this is another media vehicle for me, right? This is another, you know, now I get X amount of bonus views and, you know, so I think that that's really, I think that that will only lend to the sort of degradation and just the sort of the loss of craft.
That's a craft, yeah.
Across society, yeah.
Yeah, we could spend a whole show on just that topic, right? So, all right. So let's jump into BRC and your role there. You're involved in so much of, I'll say a campaign, I'm not sure using the right language, but, you know, PR content, events. Let me ask you that. What's your sweet spot? What are you doing when you're feeling the most joyful?
Well, one of the things is we also have a podcast. I have the absolute pleasure of making a podcast sort of on behalf of the whole team about storytelling. And so I interview different storytellers across mediums, from like costume designers and lighting designers and some like business professionals, just to how storytelling plays into their work. So that's a lot of fun because I love telling their story. And then, you know, something else I love is the process of documenting the work that BRC does. It's a big task because, you know, we build these 360, brand homes, museums, and these are like large, these can be very large experiences, immersive experiences. So the process of somehow capturing the essence, not only the essence of the thing, but the actual thing such that someone, like yourself could watch a video and sort of understand the work that we did. That to me is a very exciting process. And that's like normally photography and film just to for the archive, but also sales material. So I sort of told our chief creative officer recently, because I started as the marketing director before transitioning to strategy. And I told him, like, am I passionate about marketing? Not at all. But I am so passionate about telling the stories of all these incredible creatives and strategists and writers and engineers and all the people that have come through BRC stores and all, you know, all the incredible artists that we just have bringing these projects to life.
Yeah. One of the things I love to ask guests who actually do podcasts as well or interview other people, because I'm always looking for good questions. Do you have, what's a favorite question that perhaps you use in your podcast or that you use with clients when you're trying to get to the story? What kinds of questions do you ask?
You know, I think it really, for me at least, it really depends on the discipline, right? It depends on the type of work this person is doing. And then I think it sort of really comes down to like, what is the mechanism for change? Because, you know, whenever we do these things, it's not for nothing, right? And so any exercise someone's doing, it's with the intent of creating some after effect, right? Some change. And the work that BRC does in experience design is sometimes, it's like, you know, maybe it's someone making a purchase. Or now it's someone that's going out and they're going to do some more research. Or maybe now this is a kid that understands that he too can be an astronaut, you know, and like these things, it's so for every discipline and every context that someone works in, it will be a little bit different. But yeah, I don't have a specific question. I don't think that I tend to go to as much as sort of digging into, and sometimes it's not until I talk to that person that I'll even understand that next question to ask, like you've done today. But, you know, so yeah, but I maybe if I think of one by the time we're done talking, I'll share.
By the way, you work with big brands. NASA is one. And I'd love to know if just kind of walk me through the process. So NASA comes to BRC and says, we need some help. And you're trying to create the story so that it will connect to I guess it's a consumer. It might not necessarily be a consumer, but and you're looking to connect to them on an emotional level. What is the very first thing that happens? Like walk me through a typical day for you with a new client.
Yeah, so BRC, like people come to BRC because they're looking for our help using storytelling. And again, that might be a show, it might be an exhibit, that expression of story might be many different things, but using story to then again change hearts and minds. And so when someone like NASA comes to us, and historically, it has been with the intention of getting young hearts and minds excited about space exploration and the opportunity and helping kids understand that, like, you too, as I said earlier, you too can be an astronaut, right? And so sometimes that's not someone standing there and saying, you too can be an astronaut, right? It's someone sort of laying out this sort of vision. And what are the questions that we have left to answer? And like, what's the day to day? Like, what's it like for an astronaut on a ship? And how is that not so different from maybe your day to day at home? Little things like that. So a lot of our projects typically start with what we call sort of like a sort of sense check. It's when we do the sort of early strategic business modeling work. Like, does this project make sense? Is it worth doing? Because these projects also require tons of capital investment from somebody, right? Whether it's the brand or the bank or the city, the government, you know, the communities chipping in, it's tax dollars that are funding a project. So, we really help define like where it needs to be, right? Like how many people are going to come and who wants to be there? And are these families or these young adults or these like older, you know, like thinking through who's coming and what do they want and where's the best place to put this and what size should it be, right? Like what's that sort of sweet spot? And then we sort of move to the concept and the design phase. Where we really look at, well, what is the actual story? What do people need to say? You know, what is the script? If we have to write some kind of a script, if it's a tour, or, you know, again, what are the visuals? Like, what is the, how is everything connecting into some fluid experience? And also, you know, we use the term emotional choreography because, you know, another expression we use is don't put the dinosaur out front, right? Like, you want to be able to build people up to some emotional climax, right? And then, you know, and then be able to carry them through, normally out of the gift shop. You know, we're thinking through all of those touch points, right? Like, what's going to guide someone through? Like, what sort of visual anchors are there to help pull people through a space so you don't have to push them along? And then we move to production, which is like really boots on ground. You know, I myself I've had to buy a pair of steel-toed work boots, you know, the work hat, and you got the vest and you're on the construction site. And so we really are hands-on up until opening day. Like, we were doing a project in Scotland and I was sitting there with BRC's president, you know, putting together these like paper lamps, you know, her and I, up until the final hour. So we really are involved. But then hopefully those relationships carry on. So we've done a ton of work for NASA. We've touched every NASA visitor center in the US, just doing various levels of work, whether it's just the sort of strategic master planning work or concept and design, or in some cases like a Kennedy Space Center, and their location in Texas. Like, we've done a number of exhibits and shows for them that are still there today. Like, we have the shuttle launch experience in Florida, where people, it's one of the most like lifelike experiences of feeling a shuttle launching into space. And then the stories that come out of this, and I'm not even like prepared, just because again, there's so many incredible stories from BRC's work throughout the year, but like all the scientists that and the astronauts who we worked with on these projects who went on to do other incredible things even since the work we did with them. So it's pretty exciting.
It sounds amazing. I mean, there's so many moving parts. So it's certainly not a mundane job that you're doing, right? You're every day you get to dive into something different and a different piece of a story. So
I'll just say too, I don't really work on projects. I come in at the end and I go, yay, team's amazing. So I don't work on projects. It's just my job to take everyone's work and like to, you know, send it out into the world. The work that the team does is really incredible.
Yeah. You know, the word imagination is in the name of your company. And before we even started the show, we were talking about AI. I'm not sure how we were talking about that, but I'm very curious about where the world is going to end up with AI, which is being incorporated into all industries and everything that we do. And then I think about the imagination of people like yourself and all the creative people around you, how it will affect their careers. And I just wondered if you had thoughts on that, if you worry about it affecting the integrity of imagination, you know, that originally comes from our minds as opposed to an artificial. Yeah.
Well, I do think that there's something to be said for hanging on to the roots of ideas, right? Like, and I think that it's a practice. And I say that not really having a concrete idea of what that means, you know, but like, you know, that there are the most beautiful ideas sometimes start from like the experiences we have out in the world that like, you know, enter our heart and some filter into our mind. And then if we're lucky, they get effected into something out in the world. And so I think that we shouldn't, I think it would be a real shame to leave that sort of that bit of the idea generation to machines, right? Because that we're no longer feeding from our external world, right? Like, our world is no longer filtering our ideas, so the machines are. But, you know, I think that AI is one of these things that people are still trying to figure out what it is and how we use it. And like with any piece of technology, it really comes down to how people intend to use it. Like, what people do with AI is what will make it most interesting. It's, you know, one thing to have tons of input, but then what are the outputs that come from that? And I think we're still figuring that out. Like, people are still getting their hands on this tool and learning how to wield it in a way that is interesting to them. But one way, you know, we've used AI is at what's called Johnny Walker Princess Street in Edinburgh, Scotland. It's an 8-story department store size brand home. There's like retail, there's 2 floors of experiences, there's 2 restaurants, there's a concert venue space, there's like VIP. It's a crazy, it's honestly an incredibly beautiful and very cool. It's one of like the largest brand homes in the world. And something we did there was when people come in and they buy tickets, they fill out what's called a flavor quiz. And then, you know, do you like the taste of bananas or toffee or, you know, just your different reactions to different tastes. And then at the end, you get a sort of a color-coded wristband. And this sort of becomes your blueprint for the rest of your Johnny Walker tour experience of understanding that, you know, whiskey might not be what you thought it was, right? Where we sort of come into whiskey, a lot of people thinking we need to be old and sitting in leather chairs and drinking it, you know, neat and just only in one, it's like in the dram form. But in reality, we can drink whiskey however we want it. And so part of the notion of the experience is sort of breaking away all these preconceived myths we have about whiskey and really opening the category and teaching and showing people how many different ways it could be enjoyed. And so we've used AI to help sort of to help identify someone's tastes. And then the whiskey that they may enjoy the most and the forms they may enjoy that the most in, just based on their distinct flavor profile. And so you can go back and you can remix this as many times as you want.
You're like, so you're using it already. You're currently using it in the work that you're doing.
Yeah. And, you know, like with any technology, at least we do. And this is something I think also stems to like my personal values of it has to be technology, AI with a purpose. Just to have AI for the sake of having AI, it's just, you know, throw it out the window. But I think if AI and any piece of technology is serving the story we're telling, then it's cool, right? If we're using a tool for this other thing, then great. But like on its own, its benefits, you know, will come out in time.
Yeah, I'm most excited for what it can do in healthcare. Right. So, you know, medicines and diagnoses and all of that, I think that's going to be just incredible. Hopefully if it goes in the direction that we think it will.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, like it will only get better with time, you know.
Yeah.
Only time will tell, right? We can only imagine at this point.
Yeah. Tell me, Maya, if I were to ask you, what are you most proud of in yourself? In your life so far?
What am I most proud of? I'm most proud of the fact that I seem to be doing the thing that I said I wanted to do, knock on wood, which is that, you know, I've got a great, you know, I feel great in my sort of professional career, everything I'm doing at BRC. I feel like, you know, I spent my 20s really bouncing against some walls and figuring things out and really just getting to the point where I feel so valuable at work. I feel like I can come to work and there's a purpose and like I feel good about the work that I do at BRC, which is something that I think is, I don't say it's unique, but I feel so fortunate to have landed here. At the same time, you know, again, part of the makeup of my job and the sort of flexibility and independence I enjoy has also allowed me to pick back up an artistic practice. So I'm not dancing again, not quite yet, but I do enjoy a photography practice. And so in working at BRC and being back around all of these artists, I have been excited and really animated to producing and telling my own stories in my own artistic practice.
Oh, that's exciting.
It feels good to be doing both at the same time right now.
Have you ever had a dream, kind of a pipe dream of producing or directing, venturing into film?
Yes, but you know, I was saying is that the beauty of having a job is that I can do all of that without worrying about how I'm going to pay my bills. And I think that's something that a lot of artists really struggle with, where it's like the freedom, right? The luxury of producing work without needing it to have this end. It's different. And so I think that I at least needed to find that sort of separation and balance for myself. Like, it was too much to consider how I was going to use dance to pay my bills. It was too emotional. It's like way too charged. But like, now that, you know, I have this incredible job and this career that I have, I can be relaxed into re-entering. And also just the reality is I've lived enough of a life now where I feel like I have stories to tell. Yeah. So it's kind of the coming together of all of my life experience. And I love the way that it's expressing itself.
Yeah. Well, that's the ultimate, isn't it? To be working in a job, in a place that makes us feel fulfilled and we're excited to go to every day. So I think you're a great example of, you know, life really is this kind of exploring and a journey. It's not necessarily being born, figuring out what we're made for, and then doing it. That's never the case. Yeah. So let me, last question, you know, for a young woman who might be listening or watching, that kind of feels stuck because what perhaps she really is drawn to may not pay the bills. You know, what can she, what kind of a mindset can she get to help her decide or work through that?
Well, you know, I have a friend who's a professional dancer, and all things considered, she's relatively successful. She's commercial. She's on like a, you know, a national tour with like a very big artist right now. And she asks me about this all the time. Like, I'm so sick of being poor. I want to make some money. And I always tell her that, you know, this is the way I think about it. Like, money is not emotional. People are emotional. People are emotional about how they receive money. People are emotional how they spend money, but money is not emotional, right? So you can sort of look at things and like, it's very obvious. It's very clear where money comes from, like where money comes from and how we get money. But we're emotional about that process. And so sometimes we have to abstract ourselves, the emotions from it, and really just look at, okay, well, like, what does my life cost? And what do I need to, like, how much money do I want to make to live XYZ lifestyle? And you just have to be more creative in terms of how you fit in, where the money's coming from, but then also where you receive your joy, right? It's not all mutually exclusive, but sometimes if you abstract yourself, you can put the pieces back together in a way that is more constructive and fulfilling to you. But in general, I just always, you know, if I could go back and tell myself anything, it would be to keep going, just keep going. You know, every day is a new day and you never know when you're gonna meet someone who will change your life, when you're going to do something or have an experience that will change your life. And like, you know, one of my mottos is to treat everything and everyone in your life like it's permanent, then you'll have no regrets. And so I believe this, and I've experienced this for people. You never know who and what will come back into your life and the role that they will play on that next chapter. And so you really don't know. That's also the beauty of it. So just keep going. Just don't stop.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's great advice. I mean, I've never heard anyone kind of describe that, really looking at money and understanding that it is an emotional. It's all the things that we place on it, right? And the importance of it. So that's great advice.
Thank you, Susan. This was a real pleasure. It's been a pleasure to meet you and to get to know you. And thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I hope some people take something away from my...
I'm sure they will. I'm going to go into my dance break and I'll be back to close out the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Maya.
We are CHOP. And we can't wait to show you around. We're the nation's first children's hospital. Now, a care network with more than 50 locations that continues to expand. 3 state-of-the-art research buildings with 1.5 million square feet of space. We have grown from 12 beds 165 years ago to nearly 600 beds and one of the best children's hospitals in the world. We have a level 1 trauma center, 11 floors of patient units, more than 20 operating rooms, first-of-its-kind delivery unit for babies with birth defects, a separate cardiac operative and catheterization suite, and places to learn, like our internationally recognized simulation center. We have trained generations of leaders in the field of pediatrics. We are world leaders in medicine, surgery, and science. One of the top recipients in NIH funding for pediatric research. In this building, pioneers in CAR T therapy, mitochondrial disease, brain tumors, hyperinsulinism, and other rare diseases. Here, groundbreaking work in fetal surgery, genetics and genomics, and neurology. In our newest building, leaders in social determinants of health, clinical informatics and epidemiology, autism, trauma and injury prevention. Our patients come from every state and 115 countries. Meeting these challenges requires the best and the brightest. We are passionate about pediatrics. We are motivated to make a difference in the world and in our community. We are a team. We are CHOP.
That's it, everyone, for another week of Women to Watch. Thanks for joining me. Next week, I'm going to be sitting down with Liza Donnelly. And Liza is an award-winning international cartoonist for the New Yorker magazine. So it's going to be a really great conversation. Thanks, as always, to our sponsors and our watch team of corporate partners for helping us to bring you the show every week. And I hope you all have a great week.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.